Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice. Today, I'll be telling you about a really interesting type of appeal. It's happened recently in the Australian Capital Territory, and it's the sort of thing that most people don't know about. So hang on for a quick chat about that. It'll be a short and sweet episode. I'm recording this podcast on the traditional lands of the Ngunnawal, Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded. Justice Lucas Carlson handed down a decision on the 8th of October 2021 in the matter of Adams and Navaratnam. This is 2021 ACT SC 256. So it's in the Supreme Court of the ACT, and it was an appeal from the Magistrates Court. Now, why was it interesting? Well, this was an appeal where the DPP needed something particular to be recognised in the appeal, but it wasn't actually trying to do anything that was adverse to the defendant in the matter, which is quite an unusual situation. If there is an appeal, it's usually because it's being asserted or argued that something has gone wrong and that something needs to be changed as a result. But this was actually quite different. So in this matter, the prosecution appealed from the decision of the magistrate, and they appealed on the basis that the prosecution was denied procedural fairness. So let's talk about that first, and then I'll tell you a little bit about what happened and why. So the prosecution argued that during the sentence proceedings in the magistrate's court, the magistrate in question asked about whether the prosecutors would have a particular view in relation to a penalty that he was looking at giving. And the question that the magistrate put referred to something specific. And in relation to that specific question, the prosecutors said that they didn't need to be heard on that. Let me just explain what that means. So sometimes a magistrate might be listening to submissions from the defendant and they might be starting to form a view. And in order to preserve court time and to improve efficiency, they might give a hint of what they're thinking to the parties and ask the prosecutors if they have anything specific to say if the magistrate were to head down that path. So that's what happened here. But as you may guess, because the matter went to an appeal, it didn't go quite smoothly from there. So just to get a little bit more specific so that you can understand what I'm talking about, the magistrate said, okay, so it will be a conviction with the minimum disqualification period of 3 months. Do you want to be heard against that? And the prosecution said, I don't wish to be heard, Your Honour. Then later, when giving his sentence, and you will recall the magistrate asked about a conviction with the minimum disqualification period, when he made his actual sentence, he decided to record no conviction. And Justice Lucas Carlson, when giving her decision, noted, as the magistrate had indicated that he would convict the respondent, the prosecutor was not provided an opportunity to be heard in relation to the imposition of a non-conviction order. Her Honour then laid out, and I think it's really interesting to talk about, the duty of the prosecution at sentence. So she outlined in a few paragraphs what that duty is, and I'm going to read from that here because she's done it very, very clearly. So in her paragraph 12, this is Justice Lucas Carlson, it is fundamental to observe that it is for the prosecution alone to determine the charge to be preferred. It is for the accused alone to determine the plea to enter, and it is for the sentencing judge alone to determine the sentence to be imposed. And I'll just omit some references to cases that she's given there. And then we go on to paragraph 12. The duty of the prosecution at sentence has been discussed by the High Court in Barbaro and the Queen. It is to draw to the attention of the judge what are submitted to be the facts that should be found, the relevant principles that should be applied, and what has been done in other more or less comparable cases. The court will have all the information which is necessary to decide what sentence should be passed, without any need for the prosecution to proffer its view about available range. Barbaro and the Queen is not the last word on this topic from the High Court. She then goes on in paragraph 13. The prosecutor's role in sentencing, written by Justices Baston and Johnson extrajudicially, emphasised that the prosecution should provide more, not less, assistance to the court. They said, the lesson to be derived from Barbaro and the Queen is that the prosecution should provide more rather than less assistance. As the High Court noted, the statement of a range is at least unhelpful and probably misleading if the underlying elements are not articulated. Her Honour says that further consideration was given to this topic. Now, let me tell you a little bit about those ranges that they're talking about. These comments are saying it's not necessarily appropriate for the prosecution to say, well, in this case, the sentence of X, Y, and Z was given, and this other case, a sentence of A, B, C was given, because the courts have to sentence people on an individual basis. That's the whole point of individualized justice, because they recognise that not everyone's circumstances are exactly the same. Now, the court goes on, and Justice Lucas Carlson has quoted some things that she's thought were so important, she's popped them into bold font in her judgment. So in her paragraph 14, she says, nonetheless, the prosecutor is under a duty to assist the court to avoid appealable error. Where the sentencing judge indicates the form of proposed sentencing order and the prosecutor considers that such a penalty would be manifestly inadequate, the prosecutor discharges his or her duty to the court by so submitting. The failure to do so is a material consideration in the exercise by the Court of Criminal Appeal of the residual discretion. So what they're talking about here, actually referring to a situation where the prosecutor has an opportunity to assist the court by making a submission and they simply don't do it, there's a pretty strong set of thinking that in that case the prosecution shouldn't be able to ask an appeal court to do anything with that sentence because they had the opportunity to do their job and they didn't. The case that Justice Lucas Carlson is talking about is really different because the magistrate indicated what he was going to do. On that basis, the prosecution sort of said, we don't need to be heard on that. And then the magistrate did something different. So you can see it's a pretty unusual situation that Justice Lucas Carlson was dealing with. So Her Honour noted that in paragraph 19, it's a fundamental principle of the justice system that all courts, superior or inferior, are obliged to accord procedural fairness to parties to a proceeding. The prosecution is as much entitled to natural justice as any other litigant. Her Honour also noted that what might constitute procedural fairness varies according to different cases, and she noted that it's flexible, but it's not abstract. She further said that judicial officers should afford parties the opportunity to address the court in sentencing proceedings, and she noted that actually the prosecution has a duty to assist. She further noted at paragraph 23 that to deny a party the opportunity to address the court is a breach of procedural fairness. So, in this particular matter, the appellant submitted that the magistrate did not provide the prosecutor an opportunity to address him on the appropriateness of a non-conviction order, and that this amounted to a denial of procedural fairness. Now, the respondent in the appeal, that is the accused person who was sentenced by the magistrate and sentenced in terms of a non-conviction order, conceded that the appellant was denied procedural fairness. But because I said, if you remember, this is a bit of a special case, certain unusual things now happen. So at paragraph 28, Justice Lucas Carlson gave her conclusion, which was, the magistrate clearly erred in denying procedural fairness to the prosecution in this case. The concession as to error was properly made by the respondent. And she also noted, at paragraph 29, it is clear from the authorities outlined above that both the offender and the prosecution are entitled to procedural fairness. So by this point, we all know that something has gone wrong in the magistrate's court in this matter, and the judge knows that it's happened, and both the appellant and respondent know that it's happened, and they in fact agree that it's happened. And that thing that's gone wrong has been a denial of procedural fairness. But now we get to a really interesting point, which is what does the court do about it? So under the Magistrates Court Act, the Supreme Court can review a decision of the Magistrates Court, and there are a number of bases upon which they can make that review. So once that review happens, they have certain powers about what to do. They can do lots of things. They can find that an error has occurred, but they can still choose to dismiss the appeal if they consider that no substantial miscarriage of justice has happened. And Justice Ref Shorgi has noted in Hall and CL that that particular section is an express application of the court's residual discretion. So while certain things are spelled out in legislation, Supreme Courts, at least in the Australian Capital Territory and most states and territories, are superior courts. And without going too in-depth with it, they do have inherent powers that they retain that don't need to be specifically set out in legislation. And that comes about because of the nature of the courts that they are. And I can't really go into it here. You probably heard me quoting from the judgment before where there was a reference to superior courts and inferior courts. So the Supreme Court is a superior court. And as I said, those courts hold jurisdictional powers that aren't explicitly set out in legislation. Inferior courts are courts like the Magistrates Court in the Australian Capital Territory. Their powers have to be expressly set out by legislation, so they don't sort of have powers floating around in the common law. They have perhaps a couple that float around, like the slip rule, where if you make an obvious error, you can amend it. Though even those kind of things have been put into legislation just to make it really clear of the scope of the power of inferior courts as opposed to superior courts. So, having said all that, Justice Lucas Carlson refers in paragraph 33 to the residual discretion of the court. She says, "It is important to underline that the primary purpose of a prosecution appeal is to lay down principles for the governing and guidance of courts with the duty of sentencing convicted persons." Paragraph 34. "Consequently, even where the prosecution has established an appealable error, the court may, in its discretion, decline to interfere and dismiss an appeal. Indeed, it is an error for the court to fail to consider the exercise of residual discretion to dismiss a prosecution appeal despite finding error." Her Honour went on in paragraph 35, "In this case, the appellant has established and the respondent has correctly conceded that there was an appealable error. It is well established that the onus is on the prosecution to persuade an appeal court to decline to exercise its residual discretion in favour of the offender." At paragraph 37, "At the hearing, both the appellant and the respondent submitted that despite the successful of establishment of a ground of review, the court should exercise its residual discretion and dismiss the appeal." Her Honour then considered some authorities looking at whether or not this should occur in this particular case. At paragraph 39, she said, "In my view, it is clear that Justice Ref Shorgi's approach," which she had sort of talked about above, but which I haven't gone into, "is consistent with long-standing High Court authority regarding prosecution appeals. There is, in my view, no reason in principle to deal with a prosecution appeal from the Magistrates Court to the Supreme Court in a different manner from a Supreme Court appeal to the Court of Appeal. the statute does not mandate such a course. In this context, the residual discretion is analogous to no substantial miscarriage of justice. The relevant discretionary matters may therefore be considered under the rubric of section 229(f)(5). Look, I haven't gone into the details of what's in that section because it's not necessary for you to know listening to this podcast and you'd probably be a bit bored. But Her Honour said she thinks that it was correct for the appellant and the respondent to put forward that the residual discretion resided in section 219(f)(5) and that it indicated that the residual discretion should still be at large. So, she concluded at paragraph 40 and onwards, "In my view, this is not an appropriate case for remittal to the magistrate's court. In oral submissions, the prosecution, who was the appellant in this case, submitted that it was appropriate that the court note the error and decline to intervene, exercising the court's residual discretion in accordance with the primary purpose of prosecution appeals." The respondent agreed. Her Honour says, "In my view, it is appropriate to deal with this matter by way of the residual discretion to dismiss the appeal. This is for the reason that the primary purpose of a prosecution appeal is to lay down principles for the governance and guidance of the courts with the duty of sentencing convicted persons. Further, this is a limiting purpose and does not extend to the general correction of errors made by sentencing judges. The limiting purpose is the framework within which to assess the significance of factors relevant to the discretion. In this case, the court has the discretion to refuse to intervene even where error is established. That is the appropriate course in this case. In my view, relevant guidance can be established concerning procedural fairness without proceeding to re-sentence." So there you go, Her Honour dismissed the appeal. But what you will have noted is that she found that there was an error. In fact, both parties conceded that there was an error, but the purpose of the prosecution appeal was to get the court to lay down principles for the governance and guidance of the courts that sentence people. So in this case, the appeal was dismissed, even though there was an error. What does this mean? It means that the sentence imposed on the accused person in the magistrate's court stays exactly as it is. That is, it was a non-conviction order. It means that an error was found, so the argument put forward by the Director of Public Prosecutions was correct. It means that the lack of procedural fairness has been recognised, and it essentially gives a notification to the magistrates who do the sentencing and convicting of people that they need to be mindful of the fact that procedural fairness needs to be accorded to the defendant and to the prosecution. So that was a pretty unusual kind of appeal, which is why I decided to tell you a bit about it. There's a very clear judgment by Justice Lucas Carlson. If you would like to read it, you can find it on the court's website. It's courts.act.gov.au, and the matter name is Adams v. Navaratnam, and I'll spell that last word for you, Navaratnam, Navaratnam, square brackets, 2021, ACTSC 256. So this has been a really unusual type of appeal. It makes it clear that parties in proceedings need to be given procedural fairness, and it spells out that not only do defendants' lawyers need to be given that opportunity to be heard, but prosecutors need to be given the opportunity to be heard as well. It's a matter of procedural fairness to do so, and it recognises the important role that all of the legal representatives in court have to play for their respective parties. So I hope you found that interesting. It's just something a little bit unusual for today. This has been the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice, and today we've had a fairly black letter law episode. So I hope you've enjoyed it and have an excellent week.